and welcome to We the People. It has now become almost a cliche to say that secularism is at the very heart of the idea of India. But what does secularism mean? Why is it a word that is so frequently used at the center of electoral battlefields? Should that word even be part of the political idiom and the political debate? And can we agree on how to define secularism? This past week, we had the Gujarat Chief Minister, a man widely believed now to be the BJP's national face in 2014, offering one definition of secularism. He said to him, secularism was putting India first. Is that a definition of secularism or is that a definition of nationalism? That's something we'll be asking on We the People today, as we ask whether India's model of secularism has succeeded. Let me start with you, Manishankar Iyer. You are, of course, a leader of the Congress Party, but you're also the author of a book where you described yourself to be a secular fundamentalist. You're carrying a copy with you. What is secularism to you? Because we had our founding fathers debate it back then and actually not be able to reach an agreement on it. So if you look at Nehru's definition of secularism, who personally was an agnostic, and you look at Mahatma Gandhi, who was a believer but believed that religion and politics should be kept separate, and you take it further to Ambedkar, who actually was a strong proponent of the Uniform Civil Code, there you have three very differing definitions. What is it for you? When you call yourself a secular fundamentalist, what exactly do you mean?
I've said so in my book, that I believe secularism is respecting the right of others to hold beliefs that one does not oneself hold. I regard secularism as the bonding adhesive of our nationhood. I believe that it is only through the celebration of our diversity, including our religious diversity, that we can ensure the unity of the nation. And therefore, I believe that if only a secular India can last, and as Rajiv Gandhi once said in Parliament, perhaps an India that is not secular does not deserve to last.
But do you?
To that extent, I regard secularism as virtually co-equivalent with India's nationhood, as I understand it.
Do you believe that religion and politics, or the state and religion, should be kept separate? Or do you believe that in a country like India, where religion is intertwined with culture and therefore part of the everyday lives of many Indians, you cannot have this Western style separation?
The Western definition of secularism is the separation of the state from the church.
Yes.
And although unfortunately we are using that word, because there doesn't seem to be a sort of a generally accepted alternative to that expression, we are quite clear that secularism in India does not mean being anti-religion at all. It doesn't mean that at all. It also means that you don't have to be religious yourself to be secular.
Yeah.
What it means is that you accept that India is a country of a plurality of faiths, and that the only way we can all live together is by not only tolerating the faith of others, but by celebrating the fact that India is, in terms of numbers, the single largest Hindu country in the world. Also in terms of numbers, India is the second or third largest Muslim nation in the world.
Okay.
India is the nation where the Christian church was first established so long ago by St. Thomas that I think a Syrian Christian would be justified in regarding the Pope as a Protestant. We are the home of the Sanatana Dharma. We are the home of Buddhism. We are the home of Sikhism. We have learned how to coexist with each other for centuries, millennia.
Okay.
So that is...
So you're saying in a sense it's a
definition of secularism.
So it's a self-evident and self-explanatory diversity, according to you, that is actually civilizational and in our civilizational DNA. Nirmala Sitharaman, yet it is a term that is politically contested. Because after all, it was an L.K. Advani who gave the phrase pseudo-secularism to our political lexicon. And now you have a Narendra Modi saying, to me, secularism is putting India first. Now, there are many who would turn around and say, who would not want to put India first? Everybody wants to put India first, but this is a definition of nationalism, not of secularism, and the two are not necessarily interchangeable. What would you say to that?
I'm glad you started off by talking about the discussions which happened in the Constituent Assembly. They didn't find it fit to put the word secular. You rightly pointed that out. I'm also glad that you're talking about Advaniji speaking about pseudo-secularism. You talk of a positive secularism, then you're charged about communalism and so on. But I want to, for the sake of jigging all our memories, go back to the context in which secularism was added into the Constitution of India.
1976.
When the parliament had finished, the Lok Sabha had finished its five full years term.
Yeah.
And when it was on a 1 year's extension under emergency situation, when most of the opposition leaders were in the jail, when the freedom of the press was curtailed, when the entire country's fundamental rights were, particularly of speech, were under duress, there was a hasty addition made to the preamble saying we are a secular socialistic republic. The discussion in the parliament even then with the minister Gokhale, H.R. Gokhale I think it was, who said I may not be able to define democracy, but I can define secularism and socialism. And in that debate, quite a lot of people, if you go back and see the way in which the discussion happened at that time in the parliament, hardly anyone defined or discussed the need for bringing in secularism. And it was nevertheless brought in. The whole idea, as Mani points out, of India being a secular country, although the word secularism itself coming as it does, the way in which it has come out of medieval Europe, the nation states being formed there and distancing themselves away from the church and so on. This whole debate in India came when you started not treating all religions equal, sarva dharma samabhav, which was the mind of people who framed the constitution for us, and also making sure that all religions are treated equally without running away from religion. But the way in which, till before 75, the country slowly but steadily, in spite of Nehruji's declaration, even in 1929 in his Lahore assembly and Congress session and so on, it was giving a very clear impression that sarva dharma samabhav was not being practiced.
So are you saying,
are you saying, ma'am,
that the introduction of the word
itself underlines from where we are coming? We, the constitution makers, did not think fit to put the word secular, but they all knew, and all of us know, that
what
this country has treated religion, not tolerating, in fact accommodated and treated one another with respect, and there was no need for wearing it in our sleeve. But the fact remains that moment when all of you all are not treated equally, and there is a kind of, you know, treatment which negates some,
there was a
context in which this became a debatable.
So let me take this on to the other panels. What you're really arguing is that we were always secular, we
Absolutely.
Were intrinsically secular, and there was a politicization in that introduction in 1976. Tavleen Singh, you've argued in a column that I read, saying it was called Not Secularism Again. And you said that this is an entirely silly debate for modern India to be having. It's an irrelevant debate. Yet you will see that whether it's the Congress or whether it's indeed Narendra Modi this past week, there is some pressure to position yourself ideologically vis-a-vis this concept of secularism, however you may define it. Why has it become such a politically loaded word? Is it imperative to the idea of India, as some have argued?
No, I actually think that what Mani said has really upset me more than anything else I've heard for a long, long time that you've said, and many things you say upset me. But, you know, to say that secularism is the adhesive that holds India together, India? I mean, for goodness sake, are we reducing this magnificent country? The one thing we've achieved since independence is that we are Indian, you know, this is India, and we don't need silly little adhesives, you know, to hold it together. Secondly,
so what holds us together? What holds us together?
Are,
there must be
we're,
some
we're Indians. Everybody
conceptual imagination that holds us together.
We've actually achieved a democratic nation in a modern sense. And when, you know, people from the Congress Party use secularism, they're using it in a political context because it has been used to keep the BJP out of power. You know, we are secular forces and they are communal forces. So to me, the word has been, for a start, when you use European words like fascism and secularism in an Indian context, I think that they don't work very well. Because there's never been, you know, there's never been a need to separate the church and the state in India. The Shankaracharyas didn't have armies, right? They didn't control.
Yeah.
So I think we should really outgrow it. And I think what Modi was trying to say, which I totally agree with, is that it's a question of justice. There shouldn't, you know, catch anyone in the street who kills anyone in the name of religion and shoot him dead for all I care. And you will stop having riots. We've never done that. In the name of secularism, the Congress Party for decades allowed thousands of Muslims to be killed every
year. So can I ask you something? You're saying this is what the Congress Party did, and I will get money to respond to that. But then when you hear a phrase like Hindutva, and I'm sure Nirmala will have something to say on that as well, in the political lexicon, is that as problematic?
Well, you know, I don't know what that word means, frankly, to tell you the truth. Yeah. And the, I'm not a supporter of anyone who espouses Hindutva or Muslimitwa or anything like that. I think that's all really silly. I think that what he's trying to say, what he's trying to do, this is how I understood it. Lee Kuan Yew in Singapore had a lot of ethnic problems and said, listen, I don't care what you believe in, I don't care who you believe in, but do it in your house. And if you come into the street and you try to shoot somebody dead because of their religion, I'm going to lock you up. And why do we do that? Why has nobody been punished for killing people? It's just murder. When you go out and kill someone, it's murder.
Okay, before I take it back to Nirmala and Mani, Pavan Verma, it was Mahatma Gandhi, who was certainly not an agnostic in the style of Nehru, who said that if religion were kept out of the political space, this country would be just fine. He believed that faith was personal. Yet, in the politics that we see today, and I would say that no party is actually guilt-free on this count. I can't think of a single party, and you're now embracing your journey in politics with Nitish Kumar's party. We are now seeing secularism as a deeply politicized debate. Isn't that part of the problem rather than being part of the solution?
Look, Barkha, I think secularism has become a football in political games.
Yeah.
But you know, this debate itself is meaningless. In his first letter to the chief ministers of India in 1948, Jawaharlal Nehru said that coexistence in this country is not an option, it's a compulsion. This country is the crucible of four great religions, and the fifth largest number of the adherents live here. This is not a debatable option. You call it an adhesive or you call it something else, coexistence in a plural country with many faiths which people believe in is something that cannot but be a part of India. And I want to mention two or three
then
other
why
things.
Is it so contested?
I'll tell you why.
Why is this the word
I'll tell you why.
That some people will say will make or break alliances in 2014?
You see, because people play politics with the word of secularism and keep defining and redefining it. I have problems with new definitions of secularism which posit as a polarity nationalism versus secularism. I have a problem with definitions of secularism which put governance in one bracket and secularism in another bracket. Secularism and inclusive governance are two sides of
your
the same coin.
Your reference is to Modi or is your reference to Modi?
We are discussing concepts, Barkha.
Okay.
And let me say to you, vote bank politics and the use of religion for political purposes has been played and overplayed in this country. The people of India are tired. They want to reap the governance dividend, but they also want that dividend to include the notion of inclusiveness, because without it, this country is likely to break apart.
Okay, Nirmala and Mani, quick responses to you first. You said that the introduction in 1976 came in a political backdrop. The emergency had, it came against the backdrop of the emergency and so on. It never needed to be defined. Does Hindutva need to be defined? Should Hindutva, which many BJP leaders espouse as a kind of, not just a way of life, but as a school of politics, should that have space by your own argument? By your own argument, should something called Hindutva have a place in politics?
No, first of all, on the secularism, who has defined it?
Yeah.
Who indeed has defined it? The way in which the arguments took place in the Constituent Assembly, you had one extreme position. You could say taken by H.V. Kamath, a socialist, or you could say the other extreme position which was taken by somebody else. It could be K.T. Shah, it could be many others, and there were several other viewpoints which got plotted in between. So even then, there was a difficulty, and I'm not sure they even said there is a difficulty in defining it and therefore we don't want it. They didn't say that.
Yeah.
The discussion happened. all kinds of varied, you know, description of what one perceived secularism to be were all discussed in elaborate detail. But after that, they chose not to have it as a part of defining India. But nevertheless, all of them again reiterated that all religions will have to be treated equally. So that said,
what is Hindutva? You haven't answered me. Sorry? What place does a phrase like Hindutva have
That's
in modern
exactly
politics?
Where I'm coming. We are constantly only trying to pitchfork one or the other by defining it for ourselves or defining it for somebody else and saying, you are this, but I'm not that, and therefore I'm good, but you're not bad, or you're bad. I think the Supreme Court has defined Hindutva, and that's fine for all of us, and Supreme Court definition is anyway not going to be disputed by any one of us,
sure,
and we
enough,
are quite in agreement with that.
Okay.
But the point remains that this whole debate, particularly when it comes to BJP, I want to put it back to every one of the parties which would call us communal just because they had a beautiful definition of secularism for themselves as to who was not in alliance with us at some point in time or the other.
Yeah.
So are you equally untouchable therefore?
Okay, Manishankar Iyer, when we look back at some of the decisions that have been taken in the name of minority rights, one of the things that shadows Rajiv Gandhi's legacy is what happened with the Shah Bano judgment. And I raise that because many would argue that the Uniform Civil Code, or the absence of one, is actually the abandoned project of secular India. Because the fact of the matter is that it is a directive principle, which obviously means that those who were designing a framework for this country's future thought it was an ideal worth pursuing. The truth is, nobody ever believes the Uniform Civil Code is going to come to this country now. And the Shah Bano overturning a Supreme Court judgment is an illustration of personal laws, many would say, being used to subvert human universal principles of equality.
The Uniform Civil Code is in the Constitution.
Yes.
In the directive principles of state policy. You said it, but I need to underline it.
Yeah.
So the first step taken in that direction was the Special Marriage Act of 1954, under which I got married. And it was only after that that the Hindu community insisted on their own personal law being codified.
Yeah.
So the entire Hindu code bills, that whole set of laws, follows after the Special Marriage Act. And therefore it is not at all surprising that other communities in India should wish to have their own personal laws. And what brought about that Shah Bano judgment into some disrepute in my eyes were two things. Number one, if in fact the lady concerned had been left destitute, then what was the point of the Supreme Court confirming the Jabalpur High Court's decision that she should be awarded maintenance of 179 rupees and 20 paise per month? It was either you say a reasonable sum of money, but 179 rupees and 20 paise, even in 1984-85, was not a reasonable sum of money. The second is that there was an area of doubt created by that judgment with respect to the Criminal Procedure Code. In that, at the time that the new one was being introduced,
okay,
the IPC in 1973, the Minister of State for Home Affairs, Ram Nivas Mirdha, had provided a specific clarification that that provision about vagrancy did not mean any dilution in Muslim personal law. And unfortunately, Justice Chandrachud, in a large number of obiter dicta, which were not necessary to the final judgment, cast doubt as to whether Muslim personal law would be preserved or not, owing to some extremely offensive remarks about Islam. May I just finish? Because it's a very important question to raise. And therefore, there were serious questions raised even within the Muslim community, which is the only community that has the right under our constitution to change its personal laws. And the Act of 1985 was designed to clarify the position in accordance with the 1973 statement that no, it does not affect Muslim personal law. Now, if this is made into a big issue, I want to come back, if you will let me, for a minute. In the sixth year of the government that was there during the emergency,
there was the word secularism introduced into the preamble. Within a few months in 1977, that government was not only thrown out, but it lost so many seats that the opposition that came in had a two-third majority.
Yeah.
Why did they not remove that word? Secondly, they didn't remove that word precisely for the reason for which that government fell, which is that Nirmala Sitharaman and those whom she espouses were not regarded by as secular by those
okay.
who were in the same coalition.
Okay, okay.
And therefore, it serves no purpose whatsoever to come bleating here that in 1976 the word secularism
okay,
was
okay,
introduced.
Okay, okay, let's not get locked
they
into
it. They could have removed it in 1977.
Okay, we will ask Nirmala.
And there have been several governments
Money, you made your point.
Not
okay.
one of them
money,
has
you
taken
made your
an
point.
Initiative
okay.
in trying to remove the word.
Okay.
So why are we belaboring this fact? The fact is,
Money, I have to move on. There are others waiting
Chandra
to speak.
Said that
I'll come to you, Nirmala.
In the Indian context, secularism must mean above all opposition to communalism.
Okay.
And it is not enough to be secular. One must also be actively
anti-communalism. Money, you've spoken a fair deal now. Nirmala, if you'll give me a second. Yeah, I will let you rebut. Just try to get the people who haven't managed to speak yet. Farooq Sheikh, one of the unfortunate political narratives in this country is the myth of the Muslim vote. There are many things that are said and done in the name of this imagined monolithic Muslim vote that actually doesn't. Muslims have gone hoarse saying, listen, we don't vote en masse, right? You're hearing this. You also have an interesting personal history in the sense that you've had an interfaith marriage. And I wonder if living that experience of two faiths under one roof has altered your own instinctive impression of what secularism is. That when you hear these politicians all debate it, Does it mean anything to you? Do you think it's a relevant debate today?
The problem is not with the word or the definition.
Yeah.
You can have a little variance on the definition. The problem is actually in the practice. You can have secularism, you can have nationalism. Nationalism is such a beautiful word.
Yeah.
Look at the things that some people do in the name of nationalism. Economic equality is such a wonderful thought. Look at what people do in the name of economic equality. Aam Aadmi, India shining, you have this, you have that.
Yeah.
You can take any label and make a hash of it
yeah.
and practice it to your advantage.
Yeah.
The problem is not with the word or the definition. The problem is with your intention and the myth, as you rightly called it, of the minority vote is not only the myth of the minority vote. It is also the myth of the Harijan vote. It is also the myth of the OBC vote, the SC vote, the ST vote, the this language vote, the that language vote.
But do you believe that the fault lines in politics is essentially on the question of India's minorities? That is where many of the ideological differences erupt?
Anything that can be used to arouse emotion one way or the other will definitely be used and necessarily has to be used by people who cannot deliver in the fundamental essentials of Indian society. So whether it is this or that or the other, when you cannot deliver to me what I basically need, you will lead me on a path where, you know, I'm so aroused emotionally that I forget what I basically
need. Sometimes sharp ideologies are excuses for basic failures.
Most often.
That's an interesting argument. I'll come to you, Sadia. Amitabh Bagchi is an author. You wrote that you felt that all of us grew up with this one understanding of secularism. And I remember you said that it was that when you were young, listening to a Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan concert was like some sort of political statement. That's how teenage, in a sense, our notions of secularism were. But you believe that the traditional model has somewhere failed because you think it's far too sanctimonious. That's the word you use, that this register was sanctimonious. What's going wrong? Why is it so sanctimonious and why is it alienating so many people?
I think the cultural argument has certainly failed.
Yeah.
I think that the problem is that we are dragged into debates which are not about how people live and how culture is formed and how we move forward, but which are debates which, as several people here pointed out, are designed to win an argument in a political setting.
Yeah.
And it's actually only designed to win an argument because, as you pointed out, the monoliths are, they are not just mythical, they are also everywhere. There are all kinds of monoliths of different sizes.
Yeah.
right, as a caste, tribe, religion, this, that, in the region, they, all these things exist. So what is this discussion about? Who are we trying to win points against?
So when you say that culturally it's failed, you're saying that what it's missed is the fact that that the cultural fabric of India can never actually be as sanitized as a certain Western ideal of secularism may have sought it to be.
What I'm saying is that a certain kind of nostalgia for a shared culture of the past has been superseded by the shared culture of the present, which continues to be manufactured, made and transformed every single day. And it actually sidesteps and completely sidelines certain older debates in a way that people are not catching up with.
Sadia Delvi, when there were proposals, and I raised this, and I want to take this now to Pawan Tavleen and Nirmala, in France, for example, you actually have a very strict code that when something is overtly religious, it cannot exist in public schools. Let me ask my question, then you can respond. In the United States of America, the teaching of the Bible in public schools was banned in the 60s. When the American Supreme Court finally lifted that ban, they said the Bible can be read as a literary and historical document for the purposes of comparative religion, in other words, as a cultural literary experience, but it will not be the only book that is taught as a religious text. In India, do you accept that the problem is that religion and religious instruction, even sponsored by the state, has infiltrated many of our public institutions?
Of course, I think religion should be a completely exist in a personal space. I mean, there should be no mixing of religion and politics, or there is no need to teach any of our religious
but
books
when
in
the
school.
But you remember when the Bhagavad Gita was sought to be taught compulsorily in schools? You supported it. You said
no,
it's a beautiful book.
If it's a beautiful book, but so is the Quran.
Yeah.
And so is the Bible. So either you teach everything so people learn about each other, or take a decision not to teach anything at all. But I would like Barkha to come back and actually comment on the main thing. For someone like me, I find Modi's statement of India first, secularism later, I really want to comment on that. I find it hugely divisive. And I really feel that it ruptures the concept of India as we understand it, as Mani said. And also very, very frightening, because somewhere...
What is divisive about saying put India first?
Because it's kind of, asking you to make a choice. Are you I think it's a loaded statement asking that, are you Muslim first, Hindu first, Indian first? I mean, we all have multiple identities, and so does India. We are, we are a Democrat, we are multi-religious, multilingual. I mean, why this division? And particularly, I'm sorry, but because it's coming from Modi, it's very, very suspicious. I've just been, recently I went to Gujarat, and if that is the model of secular of India first, which is an exclusion of a large, large section of Gujaratis, they are pushed.
Okay.
To the borders of Juhapura.
So you're saying there's a subtext.
They are denied state resources. There is denial of state resources to a very large segment of society.
Sadia, I've got your
electricity,
point.
Water.
I've got your point. But this, and while Modi has triggered the debate, the show is not about Modi, but your point has been made. Tavleen,
he's making a choice. Why?
Okay. Tavleen, the subtext in putting India first, the argument we're hearing here, is a suggestion that some people don't. And that's what Sadia is saying.
Yeah, I'm bothered by it. I don't want to make a choice.
That's
if I'm Indian or Muslim.
I've got your point. Now, is that a fair argument that somewhere in that subtext, you're questioning the patriotism of an undefined set of people?
I don't read that subtext. I think that Modi has been trying to change the agenda and make it governance and development. And within governance would come an improvement in our justice system, in which people who've killed six in 1984 under mobs led by the Congress Party have not been punished, right? Has there been anyone punished for in what was Hashimpura, where they killed 75 Muslims under a Congress government and Rajiv Gandhi as Prime Minister? Nobody is
Gujarat
punished.
Gujarat hasn't seen any justice.
No, either. No. 1 minute. We're not talking about that. I'm trying to say to
but
you.
But shouldn't we talk about
no secularism? If he's saying that, if you say that you are Indian, right, you will be treated as an Indian if you kill someone, and you will be treated as an Indian if you're killed.
right? So I don't see the divisiveness. I think that there's a lot of prejudice attached to Mr. Modi.
No, there's no interaction between Hindus and Muslims. I've seen it. There is no building no, where there are Muslims and Hindus okay. living in
second,
the entire Ahmedabad.
Sadia, 1 minute. And secondly, the big massacres of the kind we saw in 1984 yeah. here and in 2002 in Gujarat.
Yes.
And they are a blot on the face of India that we will never be able to erase. Okay? Whether it's Muslims, Christians or Sikhs, no citizen of India should feel that a mob led by the state or yeah. by a government can go around doing that. But thanks to you and Rajdeep in 2002, I think television has made that impossible. Okay? So if there are Muslims being discriminated against, take Barkha there. And it'll be on television. And you know, it's just not
Barkha,
possible.
I just want to Sadia, one minute.
Times have changed. The agenda should change.
So you're saying it's not possible in the gaze of the camera for a religious riot to take place with the audacity and the impunity it once could take
place? A massacre, a pogrom.
Pavan Verma, I want to come back to, not to go beyond the riot and actually try and reach a consensus on the definition, on how we define it, because that's where the political fault line is. And if we all agree, because I've heard all of you say this, that in India the separation of the state and the church is not possible. This is not that country.
Not necessary.
It's not necessary. Then, should state funding be part of, for example, because this is raised again and again, minority institutions or religious instructions or pilgrims. And this happens, by the way, not just to the Hajj, but we've seen, for example, governments in the South also finance religious yatras and so on.
No, Barkha, this mechanical separation of yeah. the state and religion, even in a secular country, somebody mentioned it earlier, is a Western concept.
Yeah.
After the riot, the revolt of 1857, the British suddenly withdrew from all religion and made a fetish of this complete separation. After all, Bahadur Shah Zafar in the Phulwalon ki Sair went to Khwaja Bakhtiar Kaki, he led it, and also went to the Jogmaya Mandir. Yeah. And if a mosque needed repair, he gave money. If a temple needed repair, he did. The state as a completely beyond religion actor can assist minorities and other religions, provided there is bona fide intent.
Yeah.
If you begin to use religion for either unwarranted appeasement or cynical vote bank politics, that is what sullies the concept of secularism, not the fact of secularism itself.
Okay.
We need sane leadership.
Okay, but that's a truism, Nirmala, because everybody would say we need sane leadership, then it still doesn't explain why this is a political fault line. I'm giving you a chance to rebut money on the fact that if you had such a contemptuous view of the politicization or the politicized introduction of secularism into the constitution, you could have used in power your numbers to throw it out. Do you not think that that word needs to be there as a defining principle of India? I think that's the question.
Well, if the constitution makers didn't think, I'm not sure if all of us are wiser by experience, especially in the context of parties which are represented by people like Mani, who seem to be taking every opportunity to only spit venom, continue talking about hatred. We are not doing that. We are certainly talking and engaging with people to talk reason. And I fully appreciate and feel sensitive about the way in which Sadia feels for the communities which are getting isolated, if at all, in Gujarat, in spite of all the even Muslim-dominated areas voting for the BJP, which I'm not sure she's even noticed. And similar concerns I would definitely appreciate if Sadia is able to say about the Nelli massacre, which yeah. happened in Assam, where 3,000 Muslim families have been thrown out, killed. Wait a minute. It is important. They have not even received 500 rupees or even one paisa more than that.
Yeah.
And above all, trials are happening in Gujarat. Trials are happening outside of Gujarat on 2002. Trials are happening with Supreme Court monitoring it. Tell me, Nelly, as to why that one commission which went into the Nelly massacre has not even found its report tabled in the Assam Assembly till today. How many Congress governments have been ruling after that? If Mani finds it fit to tell me why we didn't bother to remove secularism after 77, okay. I'm asking of everybody here as to why the sense of outrage doesn't prevail about that one report on Nelly not okay. even getting tabled in Assam Assembly.
I just want to say, for me, it is not riot against riot, yeah. killing against
but
killing.
But these are
I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying
you have to
Indian,
talk about it.
I live in a beautiful colony in Delhi, Nizamuddin. My downstairs person, the flat, is a South Indian Brahmin. My next door neighbor is one of them is a Christian. There is a Sardar. I'm a Muslim, and to the right are some Hindus. I mean, that for me is so comfortable. That's where I belong. This is the India I love.
But then some would say, why does it have to be a subject of political debate?
No, just a minute.
If it is such a given, why does it have to be a subject of political debate?
No, this is what I'm saying. That when you talk about, give me a chance to just finish what I'm saying. When this is what I'm saying, that this is not happening in Modi's Gujarat.
It's not happening in Congress Assam. It's not happening in
Assam.
I would want fairness in this debate.
Okay.
You cannot pick and choose only.
You made your point. You made your point.
Congress is Assam. Pick up Congress is Delhi. Pick up recent Congress
Assam. I made your point. Now let
me feel very let down by the very august panelists who really raise issues of national concern, and I go by that. But you can't be selective. I've asked you a question. Are you concerned about these? Please tell us.
Okay, I'm going to take a break. Sadia, I have to take a break. I think a point being raised here, and this is perhaps explains why it's so political, is that there's a perceived hypocrisy in the secularism debate. That's what Nirmala Sitharaman is saying. Is there a perceived hypocrisy? Also, if it is true that the classic kind of pogrom can no longer take place in the age of the media, then are we able to build on one notion of secularism and add to it and say, well, today that would not happen, but this is still happening? We'll come back and take your questions, also hear from people who live very comfortably interreligious marriages. We have many such voices in our audience. They don't understand what this political debate is about, and how do we define what many people here believe to be at the heart of the idea of India. Others are saying it doesn't even need to be necessarily defined or in the constitution. Coming back after a short break. Welcome back. You're watching We the People. How do we define secularism? Something that is now, in a sense, at the center stage of electoral politics, in the way that at least political parties seem to slug it out over the idea. Is it even relevant to India in modern times? Isn't it a given? Can we take it as a given? I think that's the question. Let's take some questions from the audience.
Yes. Sure. I was just, I would like to ask all the panelists, do you, at least for me, you know, I work in an office, and I just feel that religion is not so relevant now in modern day India, where young people, the youth, are more concerned with economic development. They want progress. They want, good jobs. So religion is really not an issue. You may be working with a Sikh or a Hindu or a Muslim, but, you know, as long as they're your, the person is your colleague or your CEO, you will respect them, and because you have to have a work.
Well, so you don't understand the attention paid to it by politicians.
Well, said.
All right. Your question. Yeah.
We are talking about a speech which Narendra Modi had given. Now, all throughout the speech, he espouses various qualities about India. He talks about a strong India, pride in India. I feel that all of this has to do more with a nationalistic feeling rather than a secular feeling. We're not, the word secular is being used by him in this context to project himself as a secular person because of his past.
Okay. Nirmala, do you want to quickly take that while I go to the next question? That this was about nationalism, not about secularism.
I'm not even sure he used the word secularism in that.
No, he did. He did. He said my definition of secularism is putting India
first.
Well,
in a broad sense, he's talking about India. He's saying that all of us should think about India, India's progress. And that's about how far I would go in this. Rather than, thinking that is he carrying the baggage of 2002, which he's clearly not. And in spite of all that the courts are saying, if there is a perception, well, we'll keep addressing the perception. But it doesn't mean that the perception is based on facts. So facts, as you see in the various cases in the courts, he's not even charge-sheeted. He's not even, I can't see what this baggage is all about, that perception has got to be answered.
Okay, we have here Manisha and Salim, and you know, I'm hearing the young woman there saying, look, what's the big deal? I mean, people live in multi-faith environments, they live in multi-faith neighborhoods, they also live in multi-faith marital relationships. Mm. When you hear politicians and people debate this as strongly as they do, does it make you feel strange, the both of you?
It does, yeah, because I feel it is an individual decision to live the life the way they want, to believe the faith they want to.
You think faith is completely personal?
It is completely personal. And it is an individual's performance decision and the way they are, whatever they are doing, which is important, not what they believe in or what they pray. Yeah.
And Salim, do you think it's a political issue at all?
I don't know. And politics has been raising this issue again and again. But as I told you, you can see us, we have been married for almost 14 years now with two kids, and both the families, not just us, both the families are coexisting very peacefully and nicely, and we love it. So I don't know why the political people can't understand that.
Farooq Sheikh, can we take secularism as a given? I think that's the question. Can we just take this as so deeply part of our civilizational history that it doesn't need all the political competitiveness that it's subjected to?
I think the two things which you have to take as a given if you understand and want to sustain the spirit of what we call India are democracy and secularism.
Yeah.
If you try to shake any one of these two pillars and you're endangering the spirit of what we call India.
Let me take that to you, Amitabh. Everyone says this, that if secularism is weakened, you're endangering the spirit of what we call India. But you seem to argue that secularism has been weakened.
No, that's not what I'm arguing. What I argued was that certain people who talk about secularism have lost the plot. I think that this kind of debate is completely pointless, because what we're talking about is the enactment of a constitutional republic in the territory known as India. That is what happened around in the late 40s and so on and so forth. And an attempt for this compact to be something that is important and a great input for the welfare of the people living in this territory.
Okay.
If the welfare of the people living in this territory is furthered by this project, then this project will live. If it is not, it will not live.
So we keep coming back to the welfare of people. Pawan Verma, is that a reasonable argument? Because even Farooq Sheikh said that ideology is sometimes a replacement for common sense, for what people really need.
It's not possible to contest this statement, because governments and republics exist for the welfare of the people. I want to make a point to you, Barkha, and to the young people here especially. I think the people of India want to swim away from the islands of religious exclusivism and fanaticism and get on with their lives with the secular dividend that India can offer. That is the sentiment today. But not for a moment should that make us presume that we don't need to be vigilant, because religious acrimony or revisiting hostilities which don't need to exist will be the biggest barrier in governance and harmony that this country needs.
No disagreement. What you've said is, let's take a question.
Hi, I'd like to contradict Ms. Sadia's statement. I'm from Ahmedabad, having lived for 30 years. I don't know how much time she spent there. And I think you see the most beautiful amalgamation of Hindu and Muslim there. May it be high caste, low caste, whatever. I don't think...
You don't believe there's a problem of ghettoization?
Absolutely not. There's no restriction about an area or a Muslim or a Hindi going to a particular area, etc. I don't think a common man has a problem about the riots or everything. It's the politics who's provoking them to do that. I don't think on the second day you see that a Hindu or a Muslim is fighting over that.
Do you want to answer that?
Yeah. I think you can't look at this whole debate in abstract. You have to give it a bit of a context. So if you look at it, the BJP has always said that the Congress's politics has been that of appeasement of minorities. So you have to look at what is this content of, you know, India first, India first. You can't just say India first in thin air. So is this on one hand a choice between appeasement of minorities and on the other hand a tyranny of the majority? Because this politics will eventually decide what is the content of policy making in the future. You can't look at it in isolation.
Okay, I want to take that to Manishankar Iyer. That the subtext was not that certain people are unpatriotic. The subtext, as the gentleman there suggests, was a dig at the Congress, saying, hang on, we don't practice the politics of appeasement. The Congress does. We practice putting India first. That's what the gentleman there is saying. Mani. Is there a problem with the Congress constantly accused of playing politics with the minorities of India?
Well, I'm not surprised that they would make that argument.
Yeah.
That's not really the point.
Yeah.
What I would like our audience to understand is that the single most important question in India's politics is the unity of our nation and the nature of our nationhood. And if you don't want to discuss the nature of our nationhood in politics, then I think we have a serious problem, because there is a rift valley in our politics. On the one hand, we have, for instance, very importantly, Vinayak Damodar Savarkar, whose portrait was hanged immediately opposite Mahatma Gandhi's portrait in the Central Hall of Parliament. He is the one who invented this word Hindutva.
Yeah.
And in defining it, he said, and I quote, "O Hindus, to prosper as a great and glorious Hindu nation under the sun, the state must be established under the Hindu flag."
Baka, I'd like to interrupt Mani for a moment.
This
the
is
Rift
a
Valley that he talks about is only the Rift Valley between his party and some other parties.
Yeah.
There are many other Rift valleys in this polity which have nothing to do with religion. Mr. Yeah, you know that. They have to do with dispossession. They have to do with location, regionalism. Why are we talking about
can
the
you,
same thing?
Can you please let
okay.
me...
Okay.
Can you please let me finish what
I'm
saying?
Please complete and then... Yes, we've got 2 minutes left on the show, so please complete, Mani.
This is the hero of those who believe in Hindutva. I have here also what M.S. Golwalkar had to say. M.S. Golwalkar says...
But do you believe Hindutva is relevant at all in today's
of
politics?
Of course, it's totally relevant.
Oh, come on.
Because
they can't
even
build that temple.
Barkha.
They've been trying to get a crowd to go and build the
please
temple.
Please remember,
Barkha,
they've
had that to abandon
we have,
the old exercise.
We have on the one side of this Rift Valley those who avow the philosophy of Hindutva, the founder of which I had just quoted. I'm going to avoid quoting Golwalkar because you may stop me from continuing.
Yeah, because you're...
But the fact of, but the fact of the matter is that these questions, especially relating to the security of the minorities, are of the essence of politics.
Okay, can I please interject there now?
We have in Gujarat...
Can I please interject, Mani?
We have in Gujarat 1,900.
Mani, I've got 2 minutes left on the show. I think you made your point.
Appeasement is also all. This is just a perception. Muslim.
Okay, 1 minute. Nirmala, I'm coming to you. 1 minute. Very quickly. I heard you.
What does she mean by development?
I heard you say.
What does she mean by development?
I want you to first comment on Hindu. Mani,
preserving the unity
Tavleen,
of our nation.
Mani, please. Tavleen, my question. My question is this. I heard you say Hindutva is as irrelevant.
Yes.
And why do you think it's irrelevant?
They've been trying to get that temple built in Ayodhya for the past 20 years. Nobody goes. These are young people. They want a car and they want a television set. And they want Mani Sankaraya to go home.
Okay, so what Tavleen is saying is that the old politics don't work in a new India. We've got Rehman and Kavita sitting here, another interfaith relationship, and it's really great to see this, by the way, that you know that these are old divisions that are collapsing. What do you make of this whole argument?
I think whenever we listen to all these kind of stories on TV, we just laugh it off and we just feel that we are happy, and I think we are in a different world altogether, and this does not make any sense to us. Yeah.
I belong to a hardcore traditional Muslim family, and my parents offer 5 times namaz a day, but still they are ready, they accept Kavita with open heart, and we are living happily. We are very happy and we are doing fantastic.
That's the new India.
So that's the new India.
The guys are not going to vote for you next time.
I would just like to sum up in just one line that we can define this entire debate in just one sentence. At individual level, we are highly religious, believe in our own personal religions.
Yeah.
At the level of society, we are multi-religious society. At the level of state, we expect politician to be a religious, at the same time having sarva dharma sambhav, equal respect.
So you expect politics to be irreligious. That's an interesting way to define it. Nirmala, very quickly, is there a lesson for the BJP? Because we've said enough about the Congress, a lot about the Congress.
You haven't said enough about the Congress.
Okay,
you have not allowed the Congress to explain itself.
No, no, I'm sorry.
No, no, no. My question is... No, my question
Bhatka,
is
you may ask your question.
No, only to react to what Tavleen said, that while she had nothing very kind to say about the Congress, she also said that the BJP has to understand that religious politics doesn't work anymore. Your comment on that?
I find prejudice in that question.
It was her comment.
No, but I would want to say this. You ask any Congress, and that's my question too,
yeah,
to you.
Okay.
You 10 times, if you ask us, at least ask once to the Congress. And this is not a tutu meme game.
Yeah.
I've given you enough instances where Congress has
you
to
have,
answer.
You have.
Right.
Yes.
And if you ask the Congress, you had a classic answer coming as it does from Manishankar Iyer. Everything else about BJP, RSS, Sangh, anyone else, but I won't explain my position. That's the Congress way of shift the burden anywhere else, but I'll keep doing what I want. Okay? That's one thing. Second.
Okay, can I answer that?
Oh,
I've got literally 30 seconds on the show. Okay, I'm putting your question.
I don't put any question to Money. I know the kind of answers he gets, and I don't need them. But what I would want to say,
know the answers that she gives.
You
please applaud for that too.
Oh, you have to demand it.
Thank you.
No, Bhatka, the point is, if you ask a question, we are willing to answer any number of times, which the Congress on many issues, ranging from the Sikh riots, Nelly, Dhule, everything else, remain unanswered. But the quotations would come of instances about BJP and statistics in spite of what has been said.
Okay,
in the parliament.
Wait a minute.
You may have just half a minute. Hang on.
It's almost 9 o'clock. The show is ending.
Hang on. But the point is, that lady out there who said about what they want in India today. We all know we are deeply religious at home, deeply religious in our personal life. Yes, when you come to the public, the Constituent Assembly also said this.
Okay.
That we know this country is a very deeply religious country. You may.
The show's ending, so I don't have a choice.
Yeah, but then the point is.
Yeah. Can I give the last word to this young boy here? I have a question for you.
Yeah.
The question is that when Manishankar Iyer and Nirmala Sitharaman gets locked into this argument and everybody else is saying religion is becoming increasingly irrelevant, I just want to ask you as a young Indian, how relevant is religion to you?
Religion is not relevant to me, but religion is relevant to them. Now I would like to make one.
Okay, I have to end. No, I'm sorry. I'm being told I'm totally out of time. I think what we're hearing here is a number of people saying we need a new idiom. We need a new idiom to debate the future of India. There is a secular dividend. There is a secular dividend. We are glad that secularism is vibrant as it is, but we do not like to see it politicized. I think that is all that we can hope to agree on in this very volatile debate. Thanks so much for watching. We'll keep the conversation going. Thank you very much.